Okay. Episode 201. Okay, here we go. This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. How are you doing, Bradley?
Good, good. We're excited to be back here with episode 201, which is kind of part two of our three-part series on getting things done. And if you missed episode 200, we did really a quick overview of GTD and the productivity method. We mentioned that, like, most of the time, people mention the word GTD or getting things done. They are talking about the productivity method, but there is a book behind that. And so we'll have a link to that in the show notes again. Highly recommend it. We're going to, if you haven't listened to last week, definitely go back and do that, because we're going to kind of pretend you knew everything that the listeners, you heard everything we said last week. So we don't kind of having to recap stuff. But real quick though, the kind of the pillars of GTD are: capture everything, clarify everything, process, reflect, and review. And that's kind of a simple way to do it. But the capture, clarify, process, reflect, and review. So that kind of sum it up for you?
Yeah, I think the clarify step sometimes bears a little bit of restating, I think, which really what you're doing there is you're making a decision about what something means to you. And quite often when you get emails, for example, just take that as one very common example that everybody will understand. Sometimes you get an email, maybe an all-staff email or something, and it's just telling you something, okay? And if you can just read that and make the decision, right, I've read that, I understand it, I don't have to take an action on it, you just archive it and you're done. Whereas something else might be more complicated, so it might trigger a research project, or it might trigger something you have to find and forward or return or complete or something like that. Just being able to read something and decide what it means for you to do is a really key skill, and people write so badly that it's not always obvious what you're meant to do with something, but if you can get that skill built into your head, then it can really help do a lot of that work on the front end, rather than because the game is not to put every email into your GTD system and then process them all that way, right? Because that's a mistake I sometimes see people make. It's about deciding what it means first, and then if you think it deserves to, put it into your GTD system after that.
Yeah, I mean, especially like, let's say you get an email that you're CC'd on that you might have to catch up on later, yep. But you've read it and you understand the context, but like, it's not really a place where you need to respond to it. Delete it. Don't leave it in your inbox. Just delete it or archive it or whatever you do with your old email. So that's kind of one of the things that's been helpful for me, is like just to say like, I don't need that and I'm getting rid of it or something. So this week we want to talk about that. How teachers might apply this. And I think GTD is a profession that's really made for teachers, or as a methodology is made for teachers, because here's the thing, you know, like if you're a quote unquote like business person and you sit at a desk all day, like you have lots of time to do things, right? Well, as a teacher, you're doing the teaching a lot of the time, so you're like on, like you're, it's a, performance is a terrible word, but like it's like you're performing for long periods of time, and then you have very little time for quote unquote administrative work. Would you agree with that?
I would completely agree with it, and I don't think performance is an unreasonable word to use about teaching either. I think when I was a young teacher, I very much regarded teaching as a performance, and that's why it was so difficult for me in the early days, was because I'm not a natural performer. Although those of you who have seen me speak at various events or seen me on YouTube or whatever might think that stuff all comes naturally now to me, and I suppose it does, but that's been 10 or 15 years of really doing a lot of that against my better nature or against my natural instinct. And performance, I think, is something that's really critical. And I remember writing something in a diary when I started teaching, and I said that teaching is like, it's like music. Some people are natural performers and they do jazz, and other people have to practice and they're classical, and I'm classical. And that, what I meant by that was that for me, being prepared when I go into the classroom is absolutely critical. And I've got colleagues, and you've probably got them too, Bradley, where they roll in at 9:02 in the morning, and at 9:01, they are teaching a lesson that's 10 times better than a lesson I've ever delivered in my life. And I just cannot do that. I'm not that kind of teacher. And I get into school at like 7:30 in the morning, spend some time doing various things, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But then, only then am I kind of ready to perform, and I have to really sort of psych myself up to teach, and I have to be confident that my day is fully planned and be ready to handle everything that's going to come my way, and know that I'm not in kind of, what's the word I'm looking for here? I'm not in a kind of organizational debt to my life and my system, that I'm fully paid up and I'm ready to take on whatever's coming. Whereas other people are so much more jazzy about teaching than I am, but it's never been that way for me.
I really feel like for teachers, you kind of have this window like before and after school where you can kind of get quote unquote work done. And when you say work, obviously your main work is teaching. Or a teacher's main work is teaching, but this could be email, this could be lesson planning, this could be grading papers, all that stuff. And like prior, like I really work best in the morning, and I really do. Like I am I can get way more work done and be more satisfied with that work from like the 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. time period. And if like I didn't have kids, I would be at work by 7 a.m. in the morning. I really would be, or even 6:30. Like I get a lot of things done. And even if I have like things to do for the show or other writing projects I'm working on, I often do those or would prefer to do those early in the morning. But I've realized as I've had children, my mornings are not my own as much anymore. They can become more unpredictable. And so I'm certainly not coming to work super early because I'm bringing children with me to school. And then it's also quite possible a child in my house might be up before 6 a.m. Usually, three out of seven mornings of the week, I have a child up at 5:45 between the three of them. And they're not all at the age where like I don't have to then deal with them. And I don't mean that in a negative connotation, but like my time is then not my own. And so like if I'm relying on early mornings to try to get admin work done, that may or may not happen. And if I plan that and it doesn't happen, it's like to me worse than if I never planned it at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you feel like you've already failed before the day has begun.
Right. Yeah. So I have become, post having kids, I've become more of a night owl. Not like I still fall asleep on the couch like, four out of five nights a week at 9:30. But like I have gotten to where I can work and do productive work late at night. And that's because I've had to adjust to my life changing. And as a teacher, like figuring out when you do best and when you can count on time to process your system and to quote unquote do work is a key first step. Is when can you guarantee you'll have time to do work?
When you're a secondary school teacher, you often have, there will be periods in the day or at certain days, at certain times in your calendar where you will have an hour free before the next class. And those are precious times. And when I was a younger teacher, again, I found it really easy to just kind of waste those times in the school day. And one of the techniques that I've been using more recently is I have multiple calendars. Like my life runs on multiple calendars, including we have a public calendar for the school, which is one that is embedded on the website, and a private calendar. But then I also have my personal calendar that's shared with my wife. And then I have a number of private calendars, which I just use to organize my day. One is called classes. So what I do is I put in there like recurring events for all my classes. And then I also have another calendar, which is called free blocks. And they're colored differently so I can see them more easily in the calendar app. But the free blocks are just all the periods in the week where I do not teach a class or I'm not committed to teach a class. And this has been really, really helpful because what it does is it's easy to get into the mindset. And the reason that teachers do get into this mindset is because teachers constantly talk about the fact that this is true, whether or not it actually is true, which is that there's no time to do anything, right? And the number one complaint from teachers all the time is there's no time, there's no time, there's no time. And partly, I'm not saying that's not true because it is true in large part, but it's not that there's literally no time, it's just that there's more to do than there is time to do. And what I found very useful is using that free blocks calendar and realizing that on a Monday I only have one green block in the whole day. And on a Tuesday I have four. On a Wednesday I have between one and zero. And on a Thursday I have a few in the afternoon. And then Friday I have exactly one. And that kind of arrangement is very helpful because what I then do is when I do my what I call my morning ritual when I go into school and I look at the stuff that comes up every morning in OmniFocus. One of the things in there is look at your task list, look at your calendar and try and match up some things. So I will try and actually start to structure my unstructured work as if it were structured work. So the class teaching is always structured because the children are going to appear at your door and you have got to teach them for 50 minutes or an hour or whatever it is. But then you have this whole mass of unstructured work, which might be, you know, write a new policy about this or review the existing policy about that or, you know, set up this system or set up that system or some, you know, order the set of cables if somebody's projector's not working or whatever. And those are the unstructured optional. They're not optional tasks, but when you do them is often optional. And like I said in the last show, trying to turn that unstructured set of work into work that is as equally structured as the teaching has been a real step forward in my understanding of how work happens in a school, and it's been really, really helpful to do that.
Yeah, that's like a great point, because there are those things that are just going to happen, and like you've kind of got to work around them. And you know, one of the things I've realized is you'll have like periods of like your year where, like for example, like I was administering an exam to some of our students yesterday, like in my teaching class, and like so that day, that class period was way different than others where like I may be more heavily involved in what they're doing. And so like I was able to like I was out of work on Monday, we had a sick kid at home, so we were up half the night, so I just took a sick day Monday, but I knew I had to teach Tuesday. But I had kind of let some things lapse on Monday because I wasn't here, and we'll talk about like how to process like, you know, sick days and stuff in a minute. But like I knew because of what I was doing on Tuesday, like I had plenty of time to kind of work through some of that stuff, because I would like have to be with the kids for about 10 minutes and then they would do their exam for the rest of the period. And then you have units where you're more involved and obviously if you're a kindergarten teacher, like you don't as much, but like I'm trying to think of an example. Like if it's, you know, you're teaching a class and they're working on a project in groups, you may like be at your desk the entire period and they're just working.
Mm-hmm. And also as you get better at knowing what the cadence of the year is like as well, you'll know that, for example, like in August when we go back to school, you're just performing all the time because the kids come in and they know nothing and you have to teach them a lot of things. Now, whether that's a lecture situation, or I'm not saying a particular kind of teaching, but you have to do a lot of ensuring that they learn. But then, you know, come late October, November, assessments start to happen, exams start to get written, and you know that your time in class is going to be much more supervisory than it is going to be performance. And that's, knowing that as well is very valuable, and just getting a feel for how you play that is something that is helpful too.
You have some notes here about your curriculum redesign. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, that kind of goes a little bit hand in hand with what we were talking about before. I don't know if you're familiar with an author called Cal Newport. He has a blog and subsequent book called Deep Work. And he has other books called things like So Good They Can't Ignore You and How to Be a Straight A Student. And he's a math professor, I think. And what he talks about in the book Deep Work is he talks about sustained periods of concentration where you can really deeply dive into a subject and work on it and produce unique and valuable things. And what I've come to realize is that when you are a teacher, deep work never, ever, ever happens during the school day, and it probably doesn't even happen during the school week. Where deep work happens, in my experience, is not even just in lesson planning, but even further back in curriculum design. And when I read that book and once I kind of understood that idea, I thought, well, I need to do deep work on my teaching and my curriculum. And it's not just a matter of like picking up the textbook or coming in and doing the next thing that I know in the sequence of things I want to teach the kids. I need to go back and I need to structure this as tightly as I can, so that when I come into school, I'm not trying to kind of think up what I want to say about this thing. I want to have that in place. And I'm not saying that I'm just, you know, mindlessly running through PowerPoints with kids, but what I do have is, and iTunes U has been very helpful here, is I have courses and I teach these courses. And teachers everywhere will be going, well, of course you do that. But what I have found is that thinking at a higher level than just the individual units and thinking about the arc of a student's progress through the school has been incredibly powerful in unlocking a lot of insight into what's important, what's not, how do these things connect. And I'm very fortunate in my school because I get to make a lot of decisions about what the curriculum is in early stages. I get no decisions about what the curriculum is further up, and that's a matter for another time. But being able to, because I get to teach every year group, I get to see the impact of what I did last year on next year. And in a bigger school, you don't often see the same pupils 5 or 6 years in a row, but I do. And that has given me incredible insight into what works and what doesn't over the course of a student's entire secondary school career in computer science. And just thinking about it that way, that deep work, having done that, has paid off so much in the past couple of years that it's been a joy to work in the past couple of years in a way that it wasn't in earlier years, partly because of my inexperience, but also because I didn't have a full structure because we were kind of dealing with a lot of curriculum change and it wasn't clear to me what the curriculum even meant at times. But now that I've got that deep work has been done, and now I'm kind of focused on the tactical and the performance aspects of teaching, so that I'm now thinking about doing a much better job as a teacher in the classroom on that day, rather than trying to make sure that I'm keeping on track with the content, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You're on autopilot from a curriculum design standpoint, but like not from a teaching standpoint.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so moving on. You have the inbox, and as a teacher, you should use this heavily during the day. So, things come at you if you get texts from parents or if you get people dropping in your room to tell you stuff, like dump it in your inbox. Check your email, lunch, recess. If you're a school that has recess, if you have just small little 10-minute breaks, try to stay on top of these, your kind of inboxes, and process them and get them organized as best you can. My advice is before you leave for the day, your email inbox needs to be dealt with. Like, you need to be at inbox zero. That's not like everything is done, but everything is processed like before you leave, is my advice.
Yeah, I tend to look at it two ways. I look at it in the morning and the evening. During the day tends to not be a big email period for me. But what I do is I call a morning ritual, which is a small project that repeats every day in OmniFocus, and it just has about 7 or 8 things in it. So once I've come into school, because I usually open up the school in the morning and I do the minibus safety check, and I open the gates and the playground and open the fire door and things like that, and of course make a cup of coffee, which is the most important part of the whole process. I will sit down at my iPad or whatever and I'll look at this morning ritual, and it talks about the various, it reminds me basically of the inboxes in my life. So things like the paper inbox, the email, the OmniFocus, and so on. Because I like to kind of work on that before school starts. And then the day is often busy, and email's rarely important at that point. But then I will kind of try and do that at the end of the day. And the other thing that I do at the end of the day is I think about, are there any teachers are going to be off next week, tomorrow, has anything changed during the day that affects tomorrow? All those kind of things. This week we had a parent helper who helped us with bus transport, and they were sick. So I had to, I got that information, had to share it with the right person, had to make a plan to deal with it, and so on and so on. I agree that sort of a little bit of bookending of the day makes a huge difference.
Yeah, so it's like, I think as a teacher, you must decide, like, do you want to work in the AM or the PM? And you might take on the idea of, like, kind of processing in one and working in the other. So if you say, well, before I go to bed at night, I'm going to process all my inboxes and get them ready for tomorrow. And then the morning, you're going to, kind of, quote unquote, work. But I'll tell you, one of the benefits teachers will find from this system is if they have like plan, a lot of schools have like planning mm-hmm. periods where they like, if your school is 6 periods long, you may only teach 5 or you may only teach 4 and you may have like planning blocks. is if you implement a system like this, you will be way more effective. You use those blocks way more effectively because you won't be asking yourself, like, what do I need to do? Like, what should I do right now? Like, you'll know what you need to do. You'll just be, like, hammering stuff out the entire time. And I think that's a key thing for teachers to understand is, like, if you can maximize in school, like, you know, planning sessions, it's huge.
Yeah, and it depends a little bit on the structure of your school, I think, because if you're working in a big school, you may not have that many other responsibilities apart from just teach your class, right? And you may have one other thing that you do. Whereas in a small school, what I find is that I have like 10 different folders in OmniFocus for the things that I'm responsible for in the school. And that's partly being, you know, due to being part of the management team as well. So I sort of focus on that first period of the day between 7:30 and 9. And then because I also write the timetable, and that's a great privilege, although it's a lot of work. What I have also done is this year, and this has been really helpful, is I only teach one of the five period ones in the day. So I put a lot of free blocks first thing. And one of the reasons for that is because, as you know, one of the management team in the school, quite often first thing in the morning you're dealing with something from parents, so that leaves me a little buffer in there to do that. But also what I can do is I can prepare a class in that period as well, or do some marking or something like that for the day. And that's why Check iTunes U is something that's in there for my morning ritual, because I have built in that little gap to my schedule to make that possible as well.
Well, and I think you made a great point about parents, and that goes back to what we talked about last week, is admitting when you're not going to do things. Like if you have, let's say, you know, you come in from your busy day and you're teaching or you're an admin, it's 3:30 and you're leaving at 5 and you got an hour and a half, you're ready to like knock out some work. If you have a parent come in, want to meet with you, like you meet with that parent and you just say, well, I'll get to this thing tomorrow. Like it's really okay. You know, obviously you got to know when to, like pressing matters take priority over the system, but we all know that. I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir, but just something like that I've kind of tried to internalize. But so next thing is like would be helpful for teachers is to define projects. As we mentioned, like, you know, planning the company budget isn't a project, just as lesson planning isn't a project or a task item. That's a project. And so it may be research, you know, this for this unit, that like that's a task item. But it's trying to break down, like, you know, do lesson plans during your free period. That isn't a task. That's a project. You need to define under lesson planning what you need to do for lesson planning. Maybe two things, and maybe 10 things, and maybe 30 things. Another thing I want to add is grade papers. To me, isn't necessarily a task, depending on what you teach, but more of like that's a project. So, like if your project is grade papers, it might be give feedback on history essays, give feedback on dioramas or whatever it is. Like, you know, try to break that down further, and so you're able to better see what that project really entails, how long it's going to take you to do, and then you can knock out, you know, check off things when you complete them.
Yeah, I have done different things with that at different times in my life. And sometimes when I'm feeling particularly stressed, what I'll do is I'll make a project and I'll put in like, mark Bobby's paper, mark Sarah's paper, mark April's paper. And I'll put in actually one task for every pupil in the class. And this is stupid, but what it lets me do is, you know, if I'm really struggling, at least I get a sort of psychological win for making the pile smaller every time I do even one of them. You know, I have one module I teach, which is presentation skills, and it is incredibly onerous in terms of marking, because I have this kind of, I think it's like an 18-point rubric, and then I do that for each pupil in the class three times over the course of a term. So there's an incredible amount of an analysis and marking there, and it is exhausting because you're watching these videos of kids presenting, and then you're trying to make decisions, grading decisions, 1, 2, 3 for all these different points and so on. So it's really challenging, and I have sort of templates available for that I can just drop in and say, okay, you know, mark child number one's work number two, and I get that kind of psychological win from doing that. Other times it's simpler, maybe the class is smaller or whatever, and I just say, you know, follow up on a piece of homework and do it that way.
One thing I'll add too that I find very helpful is, unless you, like, you have your kids with you, otherwise like I wouldn't recommend doing this, but if you need to like return phone calls to parents, do that on your commute home. Because you're going to be in the car anyways, and you know, it's just, you're in the car, you can make phone calls, obviously safely, but again, if your kids are with you, that's time to talk to them. Mostly, I guess you can make the occasional phone call, but don't make a habit of being on the phone the entire time you're with your kids. That'll be frustrating for them.
Yeah, my commute is 6 minutes, so this would have to be pretty short phone calls.
Yes, it's like hey, I got 6 minutes. Tell me what you got.
Yeah. So defining projects in school. I mean, I mentioned this in the last show as well, that one of the things that's often challenging is when the project is very ill defined, and that's something that I'm still working on. Haven't figured that out yet, but it's something that I think it's. It seems increasingly true that projects just are more complex, and the things that I know how to do are completely automated now. And that's something that I've been working on a little bit with using the app Workflow and using some of the new automation features in OmniFocus. So although GTD doesn't require you to use OmniFocus, it's a powerful tool. And what I've done is I've taken a lot of those tasks and I've turned them into little scripts in Workflow where I can customize it for certain things. So I'll give you a concrete example of this, right? Is one of the things I'm responsible for is managing class cover for any teachers who are going to be absent from school. And quite often what happens is, you know, the bell goes and everybody's running to their classes and a teacher just grabs and goes, oh, by the way, I'm going to be off, like, on, you know, I've got jury duty or something on, you know, the 21st of November or whatever. And what I've got is I've now got a workflow that I can just pull down the widget view on my iPhone, press this button, and all it asks me to do is type in the name of the teacher and pick the date that they're going to be absent and hit a button, and then that will automatically push something into my OmniFocus, like a four-point template for that teacher, which says things like, write timetable cover for this teacher on this day, check additional responsibilities, and it puts in a little task for check whether they've got playground duty or bus driving duty or any other, you know, lunch supervision or something. And then it reminds me to print out the sheet and put it on the wall as well. And that's a really, really helpful way to kind of take a small checklist and just push it straight into OmniFocus in a way that is fire and forget. Because when you're in that sort of tactical mode of working during the school day, you need to have mechanisms for getting stuff in there. And sure, you can take a one item task that you put in your OmniFocus inbox, but even more powerful is to have it fully configured for you and just insert it right into the project that you want to put it into in OmniFocus.
Yeah, and really what you've done there is perfect example of GTD. You've made it where you don't have to remember what that person told you. That really kind of, you know, and you put it into a trusted system. Obviously, you're automating it even further, but you've got it into a trusted system. So, what do you think a weekly review looks like for teachers?
Well, I think it looks like covering all the bases, right? So making sure that you're not in that kind of organizational debt in whatever respect that is. You know, maybe you're overdue on writing a report on something, or you're behind on marking, which could happen. And what I do in my OmniFocus is I have projects for each class that I teach. And sometimes that class has got something in it, other times it doesn't, and that's okay. But making sure that you've looked at it and making sure that you've captured and you've fully analyzed everything is super, super important. And also, you know, being aware that there are some things that you might want to do and time is moving on. But I had this situation recently where we had talked about the possibility of redesigning one of the documents that we send to parents, and time was coming to send that document out, and I just knew that was not going to happen. So we were at a staff meeting. I said, look, this project has kind of been on my to-do list for 8 weeks now. It has not come to the top of the priority list. Therefore, we're going to renegotiate and we're going to look at this again next year. And everybody was fine with that. I mean, nobody was unhappy with it at all, but it was just something that I was well aware of because I had done the review the day before we were going to have the meeting that this thing was not going to get done. So we just renegotiated it. I changed the due date, put it a year away in OmniFocus, and we'll have a look at that for 2017.
Yeah, and again, go back to what I said earlier. Sometimes it's okay. The most freeing thing is to admit something's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And you can't invent more time in the day. And so just giving yourself the freedom to say that's still important, it's just not the most important thing today.
And one of the things, if you read the Getting Things Done book or listen to the seminar or anything like that, one of the things David Allen talks about is the difference between renegotiating your commitments and simply failing to meet them. And the feeling of just failing to meet your targets or failing to meet the things you've committed to do is soul destroying, right? And if you're regularly in that situation, it's going to be very, very difficult to cope with. Whereas if you are aware that deadlines are looming and realistically it looks like that's not going to happen, then being able to renegotiate it ahead of time that's a game changer. It's a completely different world from just not showing up to whatever task it is you've got to do.
Oh, 100% agree. 100% agree. One thing I'd like to add on the weekly review is I know some people's personalities is they'll stay late on Friday and get the next week planned or organized, or they'll come in super early on Monday and do that, or even stay up late Sunday night to do that. All those are great, but the key is to know when you're going to do it and do it best and then just do it.
Yeah, doing it is the thing, right? Not if you have a sacred time in your calendar that you never actually honor, then that's not doing the review, right? Personally, I like a Sunday night for that. But I also, when I was a younger GTDer and a younger teacher, what I used to do was I would push everything off to the review time. And I mentioned this earlier, that what I used to do was that I would, pile up email, pile up paper, and then I sit there and go, right now I'm going to do the review. And I would start by trying to go through all my email, and then I would start going through all the paper. And then once I got all that clear, I'm thinking, right now I can start the review. That was a huge mistake. The review is the review, and the processing is the processing, and not confusing those two things is incredibly, it's like it takes the whole game to another level. So I now feel very free to review without having processed absolutely everything, and I feel very free to process knowing that a review will come at some point. And a weekly review, having a regular time, is a great way to get started. But the next level of mastery, I think, is to do a review as often or as little as you need to do it. And that's really what David Allen says in a lot of his seminars and podcasts and so on, is you need to look at your system as often as you need to look at it, which seems like it seems like one of those kind of Zen sayings that is really frustrating to the newbie, because it just seems tautological that you have to look at it as often as you have to look at it. But beginning that by saying, well, on a Sunday night or on a Friday afternoon, I will always do my review, that's a great starter. But then realizing that you can do the review as often or as little as you need to, that I feel over, and I really mean just in the past couple of years, that has really taken my GTD practice to a whole other level, is making, splitting the review from the processing, and then realizing you can do it wherever and whenever. And also you can freely push it off, knowing that at some point you'll feel a little bit of pressure, and then you know that the relief for that pressure is to do a review and you're all good again. And that's kind of like the Zen master level of GTD, I think. If that's not too boastful thing to say, but I don't think it is. It's just something that comes with a long experience of trying to do this over many, many years in different situations in life.
Well, I think that is like a perfect place to wrap it up for this week with GTDs for teachers, GTD for teachers. We'll be back next week with a discussion about what does this look like for students. And I, for one, would have loved this in school. Yeah. I would have loved a lot of the technology we have today, actually. That discussion for another day. But thanks for everybody for listening. You can check us out on iTunes.com/out of school or any of the major podcasting apps you have. If you are listening on our website, it's outofschool.net. This is episode 201. We'll have links to anything we mentioned show today on the show notes. I'd love to connect with you on Twitter. I'm at Bradley Chambers on Twitter, and you can follow my blog at chambersdaily.com.
Cool. And I am Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.